C1F. Number 6B.
Here she goes on to spirit and says, spiritual receptivity to truth opens the door for painless progress, free from any opposition. See, spiritual receptivity to truth. That is necessary, that truth floods in and illumines our consciousness. It's such a different thing if one is faced with any little or great problem, that instead of thinking now, how can I work it out? How can I go about? How can I approach that subject? How will I find an answer? And let that drop and just sit back and see. Truth knows. Truth is mind. And truth knows everything. And knows it in a much bigger way, in a much more intelligent way, in a much more purposeful way. That's the main thing. Than what the human brain can know. Much more purposeful. The ordinary scientific thinking is not purposeful. It has no teleological plane. It has no telefinalistic plane. It's just pragmatic, just for the moment, blind to the future. But being is not blind to the future. Being is that which works in a big plane, in an all integrated plane. And so relying on the revelation of truth's mind will bring us that solution which at the end has a purpose in the divine plane and is not just fulfilling a personal desire and a personal aim. But in order to receive this truth, we have here the tone of spirit that says, be receptive to it. If we close our mind to it, that revelation cannot enter into our mind. So, spirit is that which says, in order to give birth, I have to give up all material conception. Then I'm receptive. When I'm at that point where I say to myself, I don't know myself the solution, I don't know what is the right thing to do, out of myself I can do nothing. When I'm dropping all material conception, how it should work out, when it should work out, through which channel it should work out, then I empty myself of all material conception. And by emptying, I give room for the influx of the divine truth. So, spirit is a very necessary point in order to be receptive for the truth. One can't help feeling that to go the way of divine science needs an enormous courage. An enormous courage because one trusts completely something which one knows is true, but which one doesn't know yet what it will bring. The individuality of the divine we do not know. We only know that their natures are allied to God's natures, says Mrs. Eddy. See, we know that truth is true and has a great concept and a great conception of its own purpose. But humanly, we don't know it. And we have to have the courage to trust it. It's much easier to go away where you know every step of the way. And you know exactly from the beginning where you land. In the spiritual, we do not know the human footsteps that we will be led on. We only know the principle of it and that it is right. And so, she says, that soul frees from bondage. See, soul is freedom. It frees from the bondage of material sense, really. I think I have to skip these subtones here. In truth, it's just a nice elaboration which she gives, because through the soul seems to be one of the big subjects which each one of us likes, because man wants to be free from every sort of slavery. What she really shows here is that man tried to free himself from the slavery of a dictator, of kings and so on, but that a much bigger freedom has to be worked out, namely to be free from material sense, free from the body, free from human conceptions, that all these bring us into much greater bondage than to be in the bondage of a wrong government. The body can slave us, material sense can slave us, personal views and personal characteristics can slave us. They slave us much more than the government does. We know that only too well. Either it's the body that is constantly slaving us, or then it is a relationship that is slaving us and keeping us in bondage, or it is our own personal sense of life and of purpose of life that slaves us. We want to achieve what we want to achieve, and that's the great slavery. So what she brings here is the complete freedom we must get from everything that wants to enslave us. Yeah. Then we go to principle. Here we have man's inalienable right rests on the authority of divine science, which frees from the fetters of human beliefs, theories, and educational systems. Yes. Here we have truth as principle. See? Truth which frees men on the ground of the one divine principle. That divine principle frees us from what? It frees us from the counterfeit of the divine principle, namely from the beliefs in theories, in dogmas, in educational systems, and so on. All through the history of mankind, mankind had to be freed from educational systems of their times. We forget that. We are so proud today that we live in a scientific age and no more in the dark Middle Ages, it was only 500 years ago, that we are no more living in those funny old ages where people believed in gods, in mythology, no more in those dark ages of the magicians. Yes, but how is that? If mankind has lived in a time of magic and has come out of a time of magic and has freed itself from the educational system of the magicians and has taken on a new educational system, that of mythologies. And we know those wonderful mythologies of the Greeks and of the Romans and of the Assyrians and so on. If mankind suddenly has freed itself from the educational systems of the mythological age and has come into the educational system of rational thinking, with the Greeks, classics, philosophers and scientists, then a little bit a dark age in between, and then in the 17th century, a renaissance of that classical rational thinking. Then we had those wonderful rational thinkers, Kepler, Galilei, Newton, Descartes, afterwards Laplace and so on, who all thought that if they knew the date, all the data of place and movement, that they could make the whole world run. You know that famous saying of Laplace, who said that if he would know all the position and movement of every particle of the world at a certain time, he could calculate the whole world forever. Or if we think of, Descartes, who said, give me matter and motion and I can build the world. That's typical for that age, you know. And we are the fruit of that educational system. But if mankind has come out of educational systems into new educational systems, who has the guts to say that this educational system which we have today and which is called the rational system is the last and best and the final? Isn't it more intelligent and reasonable to think that the time must come and will come when mankind begins to realize that the rational, logical age, where everything is based on human calculations, comes to an end and is replaced by another educational system? Isn't that more rational? And it is around the corner. It is just around the corner. So the freedom of man is won when he is able to perceive that the educational system in which he lives at the moment may not be the ultimate and the best one. Then he is able to be a channel and an instrument for a future mutation. And we have seen how far this rational scientific age has brought us and is bringing us. We just have to see what's happening in the field of biology, and that's 1,000 times more ghastly than what happens in the field of atomic physics, where we have to learn to live with the atom bomb, which isn't a very easy thing. And the young people don't like us because we have given them the task of living their whole life with the atom bomb. They don't say thank you to us for that. When one lives with the youngsters and you reason with them, they say, don't tell me stories. They say, up to now every weapon has been used. Don't tell me this weapon will not be used. They don't like us because of what we have handed down to them. They don't like that. They don't like to see that we have sent the young people of 20, 25 years, every generation into a war to be killed. They don't like us for that. They believe that something is wrong with the educational system of today. Why is it that the youngster in all the university in every country, be it communistic country or capitalistic country, peaceful countries like Switzerland, who has nothing to say whatever, or in big countries like America, Russia, why they are no more willing just to say yes, 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 and say, we want to have a say in it. And they want to have a say in it because they feel that something is wrong with our educational system. And it is. We have been living for a few centuries in the belief that alone logic and human thinking is the answer. It isn't. Above the human mind and the rational mind is a bigger mind, the divine mind. And that divine mind has a name, has a purpose, and that purpose is whole. Whereas the rational mind, as the physicists say, is blind to the future. The law of causation just can calculate what happens in the next moment. They can't calculate what happens in 100 years, in the whole universe. So here we can see truth must be a principle. Truth cannot be restricted to human theories. Truth says, I am principle, not your human theories which have changed every 1,000 years and today change every 5 years. Not that is a principle. I, truth, am the principle. And I, truth, am the principle that makes men free. And so we individually can begin to see a little bit through this slavery of being, of living in a scientific rational age, which is deficient in itself. It has lost its initial great message. And we can see that if we accept truth as the principle of being, that truth makes us whole. A whole body, a whole life, a whole man. A worthwhile life, a worthwhile man. Then, truth as life says, God-given liberty brings about the doom of all oppression. It says that Christian Science raises the standard of liberty, and we discern the rights of man, namely that God made man free. That God, in God, man is free born, and so on. So that we can see that because this is a fact in being, that man is free, that every phase of oppression, every phase of slavery must go, that no facet of slavery, being a slave of the time, of the age, the slave of the body, the slave of the modern times, and so on, that all this slavery must ultimately go, not because we want it to go, but because it's in the nature of being that it cannot stand. In the nature of being, only that can stand which is God-like. So truth is truth, says men's... Sorry, sometimes my thought is still backward, what I said 5 minutes ago. You know, when I said that that's what physics has brought about as enslavement of men is little compared with what biology is now going to do. The physics started in its full bloom, so to say, 100 years ago with the technology, where those foundational laws which Kepler, Newton, Galilei and so on have found out were really brought into use through the technology. Within 100 years we have seen something which nobody would have dreamt would happen. I mean, Jules Verne, you say in English, Jules Verne, what he was dreaming begins to become just child's play to what we actually can do. But biology has up to recently just been a sideline in history, just a science which has been which just was concerned with classifying living beings and so on, and finding out a little bit about the reproduction and so on. But now they begin to find out the mechanism of biology. And finding out the mechanism of biology, naturally they can interfere in that mechanism of biology. And what's going on as experiments already today is so, what shall I say, ghastly or devastating, or perhaps we are old-fashioned-minded already that we say ghastly. Perhaps a future generation says, well, it's quite natural. But they say, well, it's within a few years or 10 years, it's possible that the man who is sick in his body and has a healthy head, you just can amputate everything except the head and live on. The head can live on, and he can live on very happily because he has no body that ails him, and that apparently the head and the brain is not so receptive for pains as the rest of the human body, that the head can live on with a good machine of pumping in the blood and the oxygen, or the, what you call, and the head has a brain that can think, it can listen, it has ears, it has eyes, it can look, it has a mouth, it can speak and dictate his books and his findings, so I think it can have a jolly good life. Well, what an enormous progress that would be if in the rockets we would have to make the rockets 10 times smaller because you only have to put in a head instead of a whole body. Well, we laugh, but that's what's going on. That's what's going on. That each girl can have a child from his grandfather in the future. Because you can put all the sperms on ice and conserve it for 100, 200, 300 years, and afterwards inject it into the womb of a female. Actually, it's only in a few years. It's not even possible that you have to inject it in the womb. You can have it all in a glass. Well, we laugh about it, but you know, I have been reading a very interesting book recently, and. And among these writers' sites, what people were thinking 100 years ago about the techniques, and they said, for instance, 100 years ago, they said it is impossible to have a train that runs quicker than 30 miles because it is not possible for a human being to stand the speed of more than 30 miles. It will just, well, uncalculated on natural law. Well, how ridiculous it is today. So today, in regard to biology, we say, well, this is not possible, that is not possible, this is not possible because of that and that. And the next day, some discovery is being made, and it's possible. What is possible in 100 years in biology is, well, I don't know. I don't like to say ghastly, but because other people may say it's wonderful. So, but it's happening. It's happening. What will be happening if the new spiritual biology, the science of living, is understood? When we understood the science of life, that is truth, and makes us free and gives us full dominion over the spiritual world.